This podcast is brought to you by lineupmedia.fm.
Welcome to this episode of Fairways and Greens. I'm your host, Gaylord Rhodes, the Vegas golf coach. And after 30 years as a golf professional, teacher, and coach, I decided it was time to share the knowledge and insights into the world of golf that I have gathered during my career as a golf professional. And joining me each episode will be a special guest from the golf industry. Together, we will discuss and share their insights, expertise, knowledge, and stories from their career and life in golf as well. Hope you enjoy this episode, and as always, I welcome and appreciate your input and suggestions for future shows, as well as your questions. So feel free to reach out and get in touch with me, the Vegas Golf Coach, by emailing me at info@golfcoachpodcast.com. That's info@golfcoachpodcast.com. Reach out and let us know what's on your mind and what you're thinking about. So let's get started with today's show. I want to welcome everyone into this episode of Fairways and Greens. This is your Vegas golf coach, your host, Gaylord Rhodes, and I'm here today to share some information with a good friend of mine, Bob Bubba Duncan. He's a PGA instructor. Bob has a very unique spin on learning golf and very similar to what I believe in many ways. And some of the things I gleaned from Bob way back in the mid-2000s when I was working as a regional training director with Henry Griffiths. And Bob was at one of my largest accounts. There were several other fitters there, but Bob was the master fitter. And I came in at Hagen Oaks in Sacramento and worked with Bob for over 3 years. And I want to welcome Bob in. We're going to share some of his concepts on learning and his GPS positional system. I think you're going to enjoy today's show. So without any further ado, Bob Duncan. How are you? And welcome to the show.
Hey, Gaylord. It's Bob. It's great to be here.
Bob, thanks for coming on the show today. We're going to talk about learning golf because that's what we both have a passion for. So you're up in Oregon now, right, Bob? Where are you located?
I'm just outside of Eugene, Oregon, in a little town called Cresswell, a golf course called Emerald Valley Golf Course. And I'll tell you what, it is green right now. It is Emerald Valley, I'll tell you.
I hear you. I mean, I can imagine. You guys have had a ton of rain this year. Crazy weather up there.
It finally broke the last couple of days, and today was a high of 84. So we're sitting pretty right now.
Well, I want to talk, Bob. You know, we were together for, you know, off and on for 3 years. I mean, I every week, and I got to watch you work there. And I know your philosophy was, you know, I agree. You don't play golf on the driving range. So it was kind of fun because Hagen Oaks had that 3-hole place where you could take your students out and teach them the game and not just golf. So let's start off by having you kind of discuss your concept of player development, how to play golf. And then we'll get into your GPS system because I want my audience to know what you're doing there.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I came to realize that for a long time I was just teaching people how to swing a golf club and I wasn't teaching them how to play golf.
Right.
And so I started taking people on the golf course, and there were so many things that were happening on the golf course that really didn't relate to the perfect golf swing. And what I found was that perfect golf swing wasn't working on the golf course. And so I tried to figure out why it didn't work on the golf course and when it was going to fail. And it turned out to be that, lo and behold, the golf course is not flat. So everybody's trying to make a golf swing that works on a flat lie on the driving range. And that's all well and good. And then they get on the first hole and the ball's 6 degrees above their feet. And they get on the second hole and the ball's 5 degrees below their feet. And then there's an upslope and a downslope and there's rough and there's wind and there's different landing zones. And all of a sudden I realized, hey, I had to teach these people what to do when they were on the golf course. So that's really how I got started.
Yeah, it's always unique. I mean, that was one of the drawbacks when I had my indoor center here in Vegas is I did not have access to the golf course. Although I did have golf courses in the simulator, and I would spend a lot of time teaching them, at least get, you know, obviously still a level lie, which was a little bit of a challenge for me. But, yeah, it's amazing the difference between, you know, I've always preached that you don't play golf on the range. So you play on the golf course. And it's nice. Exactly. So, you know, you have this concept of great swings versus great players, and I've heard you talk about that before. Why don't you kind of reiterate a little bit on that?
Well, it's really interesting when you look at the players, the great players of years, and you had Bobby Jones had a great swing, and Sam Snead had a great swing, and Jack Nicklaus had a really good swing, but wasn't a Sam Snead type of swing. And they're all great players with really good or great golf swings. And then you look at guys like Arnold Palmer. Now, he used to draw the map of New Guinea in the finish. I mean, he was just, he was firing on all cylinders. And then you had Lee Trevino, who was kind of a fader, cutter of the golf ball. And then you had Gary Player, who used to walk through the shot. And all of these different golf swings, Jim Furyk and Corey Pavin, and all these different golf swings, and they're such good players. And then you think, well, who had the great swings of all time and the great swings of our day right now? Tiger was really a great. It started changing it, and there's a whole plethora of things about that, but. And then you look at Adam Scott. He's got an awesome swing, but he doesn't win every week.
Justin Rose, another example.
Yeah, exactly. And so we've got all these great swings. And somebody posted a series of images on the internet the other day on Facebook, and there were about, oh, I'd say 20 to 25 pros, and each one of them had a different swing, and they were all great players. And, you know, Dustin Johnson, how does he hit it from where he gets it?
Yeah.
I look at some of these guys, and I don't know exactly how they do it, but they can get the golf ball around the golf course.
Yeah, there's a lot of you know, shut faces at the top now, and I think that bodes well if you release with your body. I don't know about releasing with your arms so much, but yeah, there's some very unique, you know, and it's nice to see that. I mean, when we grew up, everybody was lifting their left foot off the ground. I mean, the model was so different back when we were growing up. And now, there's with all the biomechanics and the video and the breakdown of everything from a physical standpoint, the game is being taught differently to the better players, I think. And I think it kind of takes some of the creativity out of the game.
It does, and I think what's happening in many cases is they're trying to optimize the golf swing on these launch monitors. And what I think is, well, if I optimize my golf swing on a launch monitor and then I get on number four and I have a downhill below my feet in the rough, lie over water with the wind going right to left, and I've got all these new factors that are going to probably mitigate my perfect golf swing. And so I got to figure out what I'm going to do when I'm on the golf course, instead of just what I do with model golf swing on the track mat.
Yeah, I agree. I have the launch monitors too, and they come in handy. I like to use video just to kind of show the beginning and the progress, because I think a lot of times students, particularly when you're just working on their basic balanced motion, they don't realize that there's improvement because they're evaluating everything off the ball striking aspect of it rather than the motional aspect of it, which is really what, for a beginner, until they understand about that they're trying to create a swinging motion to balance and not a hit the ball motion, sometimes having videos is a great tool to show them that they're progressing and encourage them to keep moving in that direction.
Yeah, I mean, technology is great, and I've used some launch monitors over the years, and it gives you some great information. And it's just that I need to take it a step farther and take it to the application, put it on the golf course. I actually tell people where and when their model golf swing is going to fail. And pros are surprised that I actually tell my people that they're going to fail, and I know they're going to fail because that model golf swing is not going to work on some of these other situations. So it's really about adapting to the application of the game on the golf course. And, you know, when you talk about player development and that sort of thing, I think of it as you have golfers and you have players. And golfers work hard on their golf swing, and they try to hit the ball straight all the time, and they don't really, they believe that the more consistent they are, the better. And the problem is they get in these different situations, and then their model golf swing fails. And the player gets into these different situations with different slopes and grass conditions and wind and landing zones, and he actually figures out what he needs to do to get the ball to the hole, closer to the hole. So the player is more likely to have adaptations and different things that he does on the golf course versus a golfer trying to make the exact perfect swing every time.
Right. Well, and so as a result of all this, your teaching evolved over time, and I know you developed this golf positioning system, which is your on-course learning and player development program. I think it's awesome that you're in a situation where you can do that, and I really believe that. You know, I get all my kids on the golf course and my students out there as often as possible. I'm a little limited at a private facility now, but go ahead and talk about your GPS system. Explain it. I mean, it sounds like it's some kind of, satellite organized system, but when you first came out with it, I'm kind of going, GPS? So explain it to us. I know it stands for my audience's benefit, it stands for Golfer Positioning System. And it's an in-depth training program that he developed that helps teach golfers how to effectively play on the course. So tell us about that. I think it's an amazing program, and I know you've had good results with it.
There's actually, I've come up with six things that are going to affect the next shot. So one of them is the golf club you choose. One of them is the swing that you choose. And then you start getting into the four things that are really going to affect it that are less under your control. So the slope that you're on is going to affect the shot. The grass condition that you're on is going to affect the shot. The wind is going to affect the shot. And last but not least, the landing zone is going to affect the shot. So when you look at a ball on the side of a hill, say it's six above your feet, and you're hitting a sand wedge from, say, 95 yards, well, when you set that club up 6 degrees above your feet, that club, even though you think it's square, that club is no longer aiming at your target. It's actually aiming to the left because of the way the geometry works. And so when you hit a sand wedge, say 95 yards, with a 6 degree slope, you're going to, if you match the slope and you hit it appropriately, that ball is going to go left about 40 or more feet.
Correct.
Because of that sand wedge being in the upright position.
Exactly. Which is okay. Basic club fitting 101 when it comes to just hitting off a level lie, making sure your clubs fit you properly.
Right. And that old diagram that Henry Griffiths had of how the club affects the, I took that to those different lies, and I figured, well, if it's 6 degrees upright, it should be going pretty far left with a sand wedge.
Right.
And so then I started watching guys on tour, and what's interesting to me is when they get the ball below their feet, they are failing far more often than they should. And so I look at those positions and those failures, and I wonder if they're getting the club into an effective position, and if they're not, which they aren't because many times they're failing, I'm wondering why they're not better at that. And, you know, these are the greatest players on earth, and in many cases, I just look at the lie and what they're doing in their practice swing, and I can often predict what the failure is going to be.
Right.
So I went on a quest and a project over the last 20 years, and what I tried to figure out was, what do I want my golf club to look like at impact on all of these different, in all these different places? So I looked at the impact position I wanted, and then I said to myself, okay, how are you going to get that? So, you know, when the ball's above my feet, I knew I had to swing more flat. And when the ball's below my feet, I knew I needed to swing more upright.
Right.
And I went through all of these factors, and I started to come up with all of the there are very few things that you need to do different, but it seems overwhelming to many players. Until I get them into that spot and show them the impact position, I tell them what to do, and then they do that, and they succeed. So it's really trying to figure out what impact position you want, and then figure out how you're going to get that, and then figure out when you get that, where's the ball going to go?
Yeah, it's cool. And, you know, impact's a moment of truth, and for you to be able to take your students out and teach them how the different lies on the golf course are going to affect ball flight is a phenomenal asset to have. I mean, I go out and mess around with it on my own, but, you know, to have the time and to have students that and be able to take them out there is amazing. So I know you developed this range wedge slope training system. Was that part of the process?
Was that what?
Part of the process of teaching them these different lies?
Yes, actually, I was teaching a gentleman several years ago, and we were talking about the different lies on the golf course. And I said, well, you need to go out in the golf course and practice some of these lies. And he said, well, I only play once a week, and I'm playing with my buddies, and that's probably not going to happen. And I said, well, if that's the case, then I'm going to need to come up with something that is on the range for you to experience some of these lies.
Right. And that's a common problem with most of our students.
Yeah, it is. And so I developed the range wedge to approximate almost any slope that I encounter on the golf course.
Cool. And is that available for students to purchase, or is it just something that you use personally?
I developed it. I do sell a few of them. I don't sell very many, and students can purchase them, but I generally don't sell too many. I sell a few to other golf pros, but the students can just come here, and I usually have it out on the range for them to, they can turn it in any direction and find any slope.
So I want one, so we'll have to talk later.
All right.
I need one for my indoor facility. And I do know what it is. I've seen it, and I do know what it is. I just didn't know if you had it available left. So we'll talk after the show. Yeah. I'm excited. So for all you students out there, we're going to have the Duncan Range Wedge Slope Training System pretty soon at the facility.
There you go.
So that's awesome. Really cool. So I know you teach a little bit of high school now. I know you run off to Australia, and you teach there every year. And I just keep wondering when you're going to invite me to go over there with you. We both have, because Henry Griffiths is really strong over there, I have several friends in that area also. So, and I'd like to kind of talk a little bit more about your GPS system in detail, just, you know, the aspects of it. And
right.
I know you have and I do the month-long programs too. I offer it to beginners. So it gives us a chance to work, you know, an unlimited amount of time over a month period. And you really see, when you do those kind of things, you can really see and you really develop a relationship with them that allows you to really take them out on the course and do all these cool things with them. And it really, their games improve drastically, much more so than coming in for three lessons or buying a lesson series, you know. And
yeah.
I know you've got that going on this spring. A little bit more. What, you know, I once heard you talk about block practice versus random practice. Tell me what that's all about.
Yeah, that's pretty interesting. There's a lot of talk about block practice, which is standing in one place, hitting balls on a flat lie, and nothing ever changes. And, you know, that's good for warming up and getting and working on some mechanics. But then people talk about random practice, and what they talk about is changing golf clubs and hitting a 7-iron and then hitting a 4-iron and then hitting a wedge and then hitting a driver. But what they're not really talking about, which is the essence of random practice, is they're not really talking about putting the ball in a random place.
Exactly.
And then figuring out what to do from that random place. So on the 18th hole here at Emerald Valley, we have about a 7-degree slope below your feet at the 100-yard marker. And so I take people out to that spot and I help them learn what they need to do in that position. So then I'll throw balls in different locations and they have to go to those locations and figure out what they need to do to get that ball close to the hole and get their approach shots better. So random practice to me is actually throwing the balls in different directions and figuring out if you have to change clubs, if you have to change the swing plane, what do you have to do from that location to really get it near the hole. So block practice is just working on your mechanics and everything, and the original thought of random practice was changing clubs, and really what I think random practice is throwing it in different places and changing the situation to figure out what you got to do.
Yeah, you know, I agree with that. I mean, I'll take my students, you know, outdoors on the range, and I'll throw them in the rough area where there's some higher grass, and some uneven lies, a little south, you know, a ball above and below the feet. We also have a fairway bunker to practice out of. I mean, I totally agree with that. It's, you know, you just block practice is, again, as you said, it's great for just getting loose, but for in terms of improving your ability to play the game, I think it's limited. And
yeah, I think one thing that's happened over the years is the concept of playing golf changed from what you do on the golf course into how you swing a golf club.
I agree.
And, you know, when driving ranges came about, everybody wanted to perfect their golf swing, and they did it from a lie that never changes. Well, yeah, that's going to work. That's going to make your golf swing better. But then you go on the golf course, and on every shot, the lie changes. So we got to figure out what's going on the golf course and work on the application of the game instead of just the mechanics of a golf swing.
Yeah, the best way to learn golf is where you play it. I mean,
that's funny too. And I think of it this way: in what other sport does the coach generally not see the player play the game?
True. You
know? I mean, there's a lot of coaches that never see their players on the golf course. And I think the guy goes out there and he tries to apply your golf swing that you taught him, and then he goes out and fails, and he maybe had 4 balls above his feet and he pulled all of them, and so he comes in and says, well, I was pulling it, so teach me how to not pull it. So you teach him how to not pull it, and then he goes out and has 6 lies below his feet, and he pushes and fades and slices. And ultimately, to really be effective and get some lower scores, I think the coach really has to get the player on the golf course and work with them out there and figure out how to play golf where you play the game.
Yeah, and I agree. And particularly with your more avid and more regular players, but you get the beginners out, and I think if I don't get them on the game, or if I don't get them out, you know, chipping and putting and watching the ball go in the holes, and then make them realize this is a target sport, it's not a hit the ball sport. I flip on the golf course in the simulator and I say, let's play a couple holes, and it changes their whole, I mean, their eyes light up, I mean, it changes the whole perspective. I mean, all of a sudden now they hit it and they're watching it go down the fairway in a certain direction, and they're beginning to see, you know, oh, okay, so why did I hit it over there? And I think that sinks in. And of course, I teach ball. I mean, you know, why do you hit it left, right, and straight? As a coach, we want them to understand that so that they can adapt while they're on the golf course. And it's very difficult to do that in a stagnant, flat environment. Is it a path slice or a face slice? I mean, it's hard to tell. I mean, when you get them out on the golf course, one of the things I've always noticed is they can't aim.
Yeah.
I mean, literally, they're hitting these great shots 30 yards left to the target because they aimed over there. And, right. You know, and they think, wow, that was horrible. And I'm thinking, no, that was great. You know, why don't you aim over here and do that? And so
I had a funny thing when I was at a tournament one time. I was hitting it pretty good, but I felt like it was going 15 yards left of where I was aiming it. And the pro next to me says, hey, you're hitting it pretty good. And I said, yeah, but it's going 15 yards left. And he said, well, aim 15 yards right. I said, well, I want it to go where I'm named. And he said, well, you're better off if you're hitting it good, getting used to where it's going and embrace that. And that made a lot of sense.
Yeah, and I have a tendency to get into a pattern where I'm either blocking it a little bit or pulling a little bit offline. I mean, I either drop it under playing a little or I get a little bit over. And when that pattern exists, I just play it. I mean, it's because I'm flushing it, and it isn't curving much. It's just a little, you know, it's blocked out a little right, a little left. And, you know, if you can play it, I mean, the only thing you got to be careful is you know, make sure you're just changing a square alignment to the left and right and not just opening up, because then it exasperates the problem. But you see all these things on the golf course, you know, and you can really help. I mean, I love getting out and playing, and it's always been one of my favorite things to do is get them out on the golf course. And you learn so much more about them out there too, I think, and you can kind of get a feel for and pick up on things that you can really help them with immediately. And I always ask them, I mean, the guy comes in, I go, look, you want to hit it better or you want to score better? Do you want to play better or you want to hit it better? And so if they say, well, I want to hit it better, and I say, okay, so that's a part of it, and I can help you with that, and so we'll do that this lesson. But if you really want to play better, let's take a look at how you play the game. And I'll fire up the game simulator and put them on a championship golf course and just... You know, the problem with indoors is, that, you know, the mats are linear. They can kind of line up indoors. You get them out on the golf course or even on the driving range, and I'll take them out on the driving range if I think they have an aiming problem. And I'll say, you see that red flag out there? Let's aim at that. And sure enough, without alignment aids on the ground or the mat that's, you know, linear or squared, they have a hard time.
Yep.
I mean, they really have struggle aiming. And so
well,
that...
One of my favorite player stories was I was talking to Kevin Sutherland one time, and we were talking about Corey Pavin.
Yep.
And Kevin said, you know, you go out and you play with Corey, and you hit it 30 to 50 yards past him, and you kind of feel sorry for him, and you get all done, you sign your card, and you look at the score, and darned if he didn't beat you by two shots.
Exactly.
So that's the nature of the game. It's the player who's going to win and the player who's going to excel. And, you know, you see it at different golf courses, different courses for courses. You know, Mark O'Meara won the AT&T umpteen different times, and Tiger won, what did he win, Firestone eight times or
yeah,
something?
Yeah, I know. He just owns that golf course.
Yeah.
And Torrey Pines also.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's interesting how that happens.
You start to realize, like, Bruce Litsky, there were certain tournaments he played in because he fit his game, and certain he didn't.
Yeah.
So players, that's what we need to create.
Yeah, well, I've defined the courses in this town that I don't play well on, so I try to avoid those as well. So
there you go.
You know, there's just things that don't suit your eye. You know, it's interesting, you know, to talk about players, and I think Jordan Spieth is a player, and
yeah.
I think that in his attempt to maybe get a little bit more mechanically correct, or maybe to try to strive for a little more distance, I think he's gotten away from his instinctive playing ability. And I hope to see him kind of get back into that groove, because it's just exciting to watch him play, and his short game's phenomenal. And I think Phil is a player, by all means.
Yeah, absolutely.
Phil's my guy now. I mean, Tiger's gone, and I used to enjoy watching Tiger, but, you know, I've always kind of admired Phil, and his longevity's still there. I'm hoping he's going to win this year again. That would be awesome. But that duel he had with Henrik at the Open last year was amazing.
That was epic. That was really cool.
That was amazing. That was one of the greatest duels in recent history. So... back to your GPS system. So they come in, and is it like a package they buy, or do you just start them out with your first lesson? Where do you take them on the first lesson, and how do you get them out on the golf course? Do you literally take better players and just take them out on the golf course and start working on the game a little bit? Or do you actually develop a swing pattern with them first and go out?
Well, it kind of depends on the player, but here's a great example. I have a gentleman who came to me for lessons, and we started talking, and I said, okay, tell me about your golf swing. And what was interesting was he started taking parts from like five different swing models.
Right.
And he was telling me how he incorporated these different things into his golf swing. And I was about to ready to cringe with all this information. You know, I was like, wow, this is... And I said, okay, well, let's see you hit a couple shots. And it is the most unorthodox swing I've ever seen. And what's interesting is he hits soft little draws every time.
Wow.
I mean, it's unbelievable. And I said, well, I kind of like the way you're hitting the ball. And he says, yeah, I like the way I'm hitting it too. And I said, well, we don't want to fix that. And he said, well, no. And he said, I thought what we'd do is do your GPS system and go on the golf course and start figuring that out. And so we immediately went on the golf course, and I did some evaluations and some instructions. And so out of a 10-hour program, we were on the golf course 6 hours out of 10, and 4 hours on the short game and in the short game area. And we got all done and with our time. And he said, you know, there's nobody out there talking about what you're talking about. And I said, I know, isn't that great?
Yeah, it is. Well, there's
said,
a few
yeah,
of us out
is,
there.
This
there's,
is all amazing stuff.
There's a few of us out there. We're hard to find.
You know, we are.
So you do a 10-hour session. So for all my listeners out there that are up in the Northwest or heading out that way and they want to work with Bob, what do you charge for your GPS system? Is it a standard thing, or do you always want 10 hours with them, or can you break it down?
I can break it down. You know, I do 10, 7, 5, and 3-hour programs, and it just depends on what they want to do. I have a 3-month extended program that gets into a very a lot more in depth and a lot more training. I also have a group program that's I call it cross training, where we meet 4 days a week for 4 weeks, and we do both training of the different locations and lies that we're working on, and then we also once a week get a 9-hole round in that's supervised, and I try to help them through the process. So
cool.
I've got a lot of different things I can do, and it just depends on what the player wants to do.
That's cool. And you just have access to the 9-hole course. There's no green fee involved in that for the student.
Actually, we have an 18-hole course. There's no extra fees. We cart is included, so Emerald Valley allows me to pretty much go wherever I want to go on the facility to help people play golf, and they are very supportive of the golf of my instruction, and they're very supportive of the players, and that what they know is that we're trying to develop players that want to play and want to come to Emerald Valley.
Yeah, I know, and I've always been able to do that too, particularly in Sacramento when I was out at Davis.
Yeah.
I had access all the time, and I always took my students out. It's a little bit cramped over at the country club right now, but we're working on some different things. I can take them and play indoors with them, which I do, but again, we have perfect lies all the time. But it's still beneficial. People don't really realize how important it is to play. And, you know, to just, because I can crank the wind up in the machines, and I can have them hit into crosswinds on the range. I mean, it's just a phenomenal simulator. It's the most amazing thing in the world. And, and so I utilize it as often as I can, particularly for better players. But to be able to take them out and get all the different lies, which is why I'm really interested in your range wedge slope training. If I need to get something that would allow me to actually put them in the simulator and actually have them simulate the lie they're looking at on the golf course they're playing, which would be really cool. So
that'd be cool.
Yeah, it would be. We got some time left, Bob.
Yeah.
Talk about what you want to talk about, man. Share some info. You've always been a very intelligent, very, very thoughtful golf instructor, and always a little bit, you know, most people kind of over it back in the old days, they looked at kind of both of us kind of sideways, but in particular, you know, I've watched you develop as a teacher. I've watched your programs develop over time, and I know that club fitting and equipment is a key component to what you do as well, we've known that forever, so tell me what else you got going on.
Well, one of the things that's great about this facility at Emerald Valley is the Oregon Ducks practice here, which is awesome. They're the current reigning national champions from last year.
Right.
And they built the most awesome short game area behind our range. It is phenomenal. We can hit shots to a green from about up to 85 or 90 yards.
Wow.
And I can go pretty much anywhere on that short game area in the bunkers and do a fairway bunker, and uphill, downhill, side hill, chipping, pitching, putting. And I can pretty much dial people in on the short game. So I have a different philosophy on the short game in that when people teach the short game in the past, they're always talking about percentages, and I wanted two-thirds in the air and one-third on the ground, or one-third in the air and two-thirds on the ground. And I'm like, oh, okay, that's well and good, but what I want to know is when I make a chipping motion, I want to know what club I'm hitting, and I want to know how far that ball flies and how far it rolls. I don't want to do any percentages, and I don't want to do any guesswork. I want to know exactly how far I am from the hole. I want to know what my swing should be, and I want to know what club and what swing are going to produce that distance. And so what I do is I make a chart, and I do a lot of actual pacing. And what the chart tells me is when I figure out the yardage, chart tells me which swing to make and what club to hit. And to me, that's two-thirds of performance. If I know what swing I'm supposed to make and what club I'm supposed to hit, two-thirds of the work is done, and now all I got to do is execute.
Yeah.
So I work on all the actual numbers and none of the percentages. I don't even know what my percentages are. I kind of don't know what my numbers are. I just have them on a card. I just look at the card and it tells me what I want to do. So I'm able to do some other players may not be able, or teachers may not be able to do. And I really get into the actual performance of the shots and where they land, what they do after they land. And some people ask me if I work on flighting the ball, and I say, well, I work on what the ball does, and then if I want to flight it or change the flight of it, at least I know where I'm starting.
Right.
And so I need a baseline. I need to know what my short game is doing so that if I want to change something, well, I have an opportunity, but it's so often I don't really have to change. I just pick the club and the yardage and execute. And the first time I actually did this was back at Hagen Oaks. And you might remember a guy named Bobby Saravo.
Yes.
And Bobby taught me how to do this. And so the next day after he taught me this and I had it all figured out, I went on the golf course in a little tournament, and I had 9 greens in regulation. I had 9 up and down opportunities. The longest putt I had was 6 feet, and I up and downed all 9 of them.
Perfect.
Yeah, and I thought, well, geez, Saravo's he's a genius. So I got to give him props for giving me the knowledge way back when to start to figure this out. And so I included in my GPS system, so as part of that is positioning the golfer for success, and I want to position the club for success, and I've developed some short game positions that are very effective that I'm really not hearing anywhere else on TV or in instructional pieces. So I'm really into the effective nature of the shot. What position do we want? When we get that, what are we going to get? And how do we apply that on the golf course? So the short game is really another fundamental of GPS that I work hard on.
Yeah, and I would think for real player development, it's absolutely essential that the short game aspect of instruction is included along with the on-course stuff. Players, like I say, you know, I'm a big believer that players don't get better on the range. They might make better contact, but I see so many students that I practice three times a week, and I say, well, describe your practice to me.
Exactly.
And they're running out to the range for and hitting balls, you know, they got for an hour, they're probably hitting 300 balls in an hour, the scrape and hit syndrome. And I said, well, did you go chip and putt and work on your short game? Well, there's really no area to do that in. And I said, well, maybe you better find a better place to practice. Or, you know, it's just people think that, you know, practice is going to make them better, but it really just basically, in most cases, just grooves their compensations when they're rushed and they're hitting that many balls in a row. And you know, it's interesting to watch. I always ask my students, you know, what is your goal? Why are you here? What are you thinking about? What do you want to get out of this? I mean, you're paying me money. Do you want to, you know, what's your goal here? And you know, I always try to steer them into the game and into creative stuff. I get my high school kids out there, and we play competitive games in the short game area for hours. And
yeah, and that's great.
And that's really, you know, to be able to get the ball up and down is a huge part of the game. I mean, even the best players in the world hit 12, 13 greens a round on average. And of course, they're playing courses that are a lot tougher than what we play. But yeah, it's just, you know, to be able to have a situation where you have the ability to do that, Bob. And I know you've landed in a great place at Emerald Valley.
Oh, it's awesome here.
Yeah, it's really nice. And then you get to run over. And now when you run over to Australia, are you kind of doing the same thing over there? Or?
Yeah, I work with David Ruckless and Jeff Mansfield over in Sydney.
Mm-hmm.
And they have four or five venues that they're able to teach at.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a different environment over there. It's really great. And we do on-course lessons about every other day while I'm there. And we do get out to play some golf on our own. We get to play Barnboogle Dunes, which is in Tasmania. So
wow,
that's awesome over there. It's playing golf in Tasmania is phenomenal. And so they teach pretty much the same way I teach. They do a lot of on-course work, and they put people in these different situations and locations, and they work them on what's going to be effective. How do we get the ball to approach the green and get closer to the hole? So the Australians are great, and we have a running joke that the Australian warm-up is the walk from the pro shop to the first tee.
Perfect.
So what happens is, in a lot of cases, we try to get him to warm up and learn how important a warm up is. And otherwise, if we don't warm up, we figure the first five holes are going to be warm up. So even though you know what you're supposed to do, by not warming up, your body is just not ready to do it.
Right.
And so we're making some headway with some players over there to get them to warm up. But these guys in Australia are awesome teachers, and it's really a privilege to go over there and work with them.
Yeah, I know. It's got to be a great thing. I'd like to know, of course, going over there and being able to work and generate revenue while you're there is always a good thing, too. It kind of pays for the vacation, more or less.
Yeah,
so. But I'm going to have to buzz up into Oregon and come by and watch you work a little bit again. It's been a long time. You know, what I've discovered, Bob, and I think you're aware of this too, is we all share information. Our generation in particular, it was interesting. Getting involved with the Henry Griffiths Company back in 1989 when I did, or 88, it got me around other instructors that were willing to share information. Whereas when I was first starting to teach down here in Las Vegas in 87, there weren't any other instructors here that were willing to kind of help me because I was their competition. And yeah. to get into a group of guys, particularly, you know, the Henrys and all the people that we were associated with. I mean, there were we drew in some phenomenal, innovative instructors because obviously to value the importance of club fitting was pioneering back then.
And it really was.
And so we were, to be able to be in a situation where we pioneered something is, in my mind, important as club fitting, and now the industry's involved in basically they claim they're doing club fitting, but they kind of fit the masses, but it's better than nothing. And to be able to get around this, and we've always shared information. I mean, to get around Chuck Hogan and Michael Hebron and Randy and all these incredible people over the years, and we've kind of gleaned. There's nothing really new out there in terms of the basics of the golf swing. I mean, the truth is there's always this new theory every month or so that pops up. But when you look at it, us old school guys, we go, there's nothing new there. It's just a new way to say something. And, it's interesting having gone to the golfing machine and been certified and taken, both weeks of classes. And just to understand the physics and of the rotation and impact, and the truth about impact was really what kind of took me to another level. So it's just this group of instructors that have developed these things, and you've taken all these ideas and created your own system, your GPS system, and I think it's phenomenal, Bob. I think it's exactly what golf instruction should be headed toward, and I think there's pockets of it around the country where, if you look at and you listen to the story of Jordan Spieth, for instance, I mean, he was out there playing and hustling and playing every day, and he was on the golf course. I mean, obviously his coach really didn't change something that was working in my mind, and it's rather unorthodox release through the ball, and yet the kid was just phenomenal, and I just think that I try to work with my kids like that. I try not to get them too wound up in the golf swing mechanics and just get them targeting and hitting shots. And I think your program to be able to get on the golf course and put them in these different lies, in the fairway bunkers, how to hit a draw, how to hit a fade, all that stuff on the golf course is just phenomenal. And kudos to you. And it's awesome that you have a place where you can do it, because I think a lot of us golf pros are limited sometimes, our ability to access the golf course. There was a time when it was all about getting as many people, cramming as many people out there as you can so you could pay the water bill. And unfortunately, the player development programs just weren't happening. As a result, the industry is suffering a little bit. I think the baby boomers drove it for so long, and now we're all dying off, and we've got to bring a whole new generation in. And it's kudos to you for putting this together. And I've been to your website a couple times, and I've stolen some of your ideas. Hope you don't mind. But
I think
that's what we do. I mean, we see what's working, and we take it. And still, a lot of my guests, Kathy and Gildersleeve Jensen and Chris Aoki's been on. You've been on. Just Boltsy's been on. There's a phenomenal group of people out there that the basis of my show is just let's bring some innovative, old school ideas and thoughts to the game. There's so much current events and all these blogs and shows about what's going on, but in reality, the average golfer is running into us out there. He's not running into these, high dollar pros. And we're responsible for growing the game. And I think, Bob, you're a testament to the PGA and your desire to help people on course and get them out there on the golf course and work with them out there is just a great testament to what you got going on. So I wanted,
if I could just say one little thing about that.
Keep going.
The only pro that I ever took lessons from was a gentleman by the name of Manuel De La Torre, who was at Milwaukee Country Club in Wisconsin forever.
I've got his book.
60 years, yeah.
Yeah, phenomenal. And
so the first lesson I had with him, he asked if I had any questions of him to start off with, and I said, yeah, what makes you such a good instructor? And he laughed, and he said, well, I don't know how good I am, but I know one thing. I'm different. And I said, yes, you are. And he said, so if I'm the same, then I'm not better. And I said, yeah. And he said, so my only advice to you is be different, and chances are you'll be better. And so that's what I've strived for over the years, is I always wanted to look at where I could take the game and try to be different about the approach, make it a different experience rather than just hitting golf balls on the range. So that all came from Manuel De La Torre a long time ago.
And it's a testament to that. You were different. When I first met you at Hagen Oaks, you had a different spin on teaching, and I learned a lot from you. And, you know, I've dissected his book. I mean, it was, you know, the basis of Swing the Club Head and it was just, there's so many great things out there. And to be able to incorporate all the things that we've learned over the years and to be able to share it with our students, I think that's what keeps us going.
And, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and I want to thank you for coming on the show. And anytime you have something you want to share with us, Bob, come on back. And for all you got, for all my listeners that are out on the West Coast, particularly up in the Northwest, there's a tremendous amount of talent up there. And if you're in the Oregon area and you'd like to have a different experience and be able to get out on the golf course with one of the best instructors out there, I would encourage you to get a hold of Bob. He's out at Emerald Valley Golf Course. He can be reached by email at golfsavvy@msn.com. I always like that email, by the way.
Thank you.
And then his phone number is 541-749-8253. Again, 541-749-8253. So if you're out in the Northwest and you really want to get a different experience, a different learning experience, give Bob a call. He's out there, and I'm sure he'd be more than welcome to invite you in and teach you what he knows. Bob, again, thanks for coming on the show, and you know, when we hang up on this deal, I'm going to talk to you about that range slope training system.
You got it. Thanks for having me. It's always fun talking golf with you.
Yeah, Bob, and I appreciate you coming on the show. We'll do this again. I want to thank Bob for joining the show today, and also thank my audience for listening in. And stay tuned for next week's episode as we continue on the endless journey of golf. This is your host, the Vegas Golf Coach, Gaylord Rhodes, signing off, and thanks for listening. Well, folks, it's time to say goodbye to this episode of Fairways and Greens. Hope you enjoyed the show. And if you would like to subscribe to the show, just head over to golfcoachpodcast.com. That's www.golfcoachpodcast.com. And don't forget to reach out with your questions and your input on the show to info@golfcoachpodcast.com. So reach out with your questions and anything you'd like to add or any suggestion on future shows to info@golfcoachpodcast.com. And you can find me, the Vegas Golf Coach, and a link to my blogs, coaching centers, and programs at www.vegasgolfcoach.com. That's www.vegasgolfcoach.com. So goodbye for now, and here's to finding your share of fairways and greens in your journey through life and golf.
This podcast was a presentation of LightUpMedia.fm.